Still, something had happened between her and Lolo in the year that they had been apart. In Hawaii, he had been so full of life, so eager with his plans. At night, when they were alone, he would tell her about growing up as a boy during the war, watching his father and eldest brother leave to join the Revolutionary Army, hearing the news that both had been killed and everything lost, the Dutch army setting their house aflame, their flight into the countryside, his mother selling her gold jewelry, a piece at a time, in exchange for food. Things would be changing, now that the Dutch had been driven out, Lolo had told her. He would return and teach at the university, be part of that change. He didn't talk that way anymore. In fact, it seemed as though he barely spoke to her at all, only out of necessity, or when spoken to. And even then, only of the task at hand, repairing a leak or planning a trip to visit some distant cousin. It was as if he had pulled into some dark hidden place, out of reach, taking with him the brightest part of himself. On some nights she would hear him up after everyone else had gone to bed, wandering through the house with a bottle of imported whiskey, nursing his secrets. Other nights he would tuck a pistol under his pillow before falling off to sleep. Whenever she asked him what was wrong, he would gently rebuff her, saying he was just tired. It was as if he had come to mistrust words somehow. Words and the sentiments words carried. She suspected these problems had something to do with Lolo's job. When she arrived, he was working for the army as a geologist, serving roads and tunnels. It was mind-numbing work that didn't pay very much. The refrigerator alone cost 2 months' salary. And now, with a wife and child to provide for, no wonder he was depressed. She hadn't traveled all this way to be a burden, she decided. She would carry her own weight. She found herself a job right away, teaching English to Indonesian businessmen at the American Embassy, part of the U.S. foreign aid package to developing countries. The money helped, but didn't relieve her loneliness. The Indonesian businessmen weren't much interested in the niceties of the English language, and several made passes at her. The Americans were mostly older men, careerists in the State Department. The occasional economists or journalists who would mysteriously disappear for months at a time, their affiliation or function in the embassy never quite clear. Some of them were caricatures of the ugly American, prone to making jokes about Indonesians until they found out that she was married to one. And then they would try to play it off. Oh, don't take Jim too seriously. The heat's gotten to him. How's your son, by the way? Fine, fine boy. These men knew the country, though, or parts of it anyway. The closets where the skeletons were buried. Over lunch or casual conversation, they would share with her things she couldn't learn in the published news reports. They explained how Sukarno had frayed badly on the nerves of a U.S. government already obsessed with the march of communism through Indochina. What with his nationalist rhetoric and his politics of non-alignment, he was as bad as Lumumba or Nasser, only worse, given Indonesia's strategic importance. Word was that the CIA had played a part in the coup, although nobody knew for sure. More certain was the fact that after the coup, the military had swept the countryside for supposed communist sympathizers. The death toll was anybody's guess. A few hundred thousand, maybe, half a million. Even the smart guys at the agency had lost count. Innuendo, half-whispered asides. That's how my mother found out that we had arrived in Jakarta less than a year after one of the more brutal and swift campaigns of suppression in modern times. The idea frightened her, the notion that history could be swallowed up so completely, the same way the rich and loamy earth could soak up the rivers of blood that had once coursed through the streets, the way people could continue about their business beneath giant posters of the new president as if nothing had happened. A nation busy developing itself. As her circle of Indonesian friends widened, a few of them would be willing to tell her other stories about the corruption that pervaded government agencies, the shakedowns by police and the military, entire industries carved out for the president's family and entourage. And with each new story, my mother would go to Lolo in private and ask him, "Is it true?" He would never say. The more she asked, the more steadfast he became in his good-natured silence. "Why are you worrying about such talk?" he would ask her. "Why don't you buy a new dress for the party?" She had finally complained to one of Lolo's cousins, a pediatrician who had helped look after Lolo during the war. "You don't understand," the cousin had told her gently. "Understand what?" my mother asked. "The circumstances of Lolo's return," the cousin said. "He hadn't planned on coming back from Hawaii so early, you know. During the purge, all students studying abroad had been summoned without explanations, their passports revoked. When Lolo stepped off the plane, he had no idea what might happen to him next. We couldn't see him. The army officials took him away and questioned him. They told him that he had just been conscripted and would be going to the jungles of New Guinea for a year. And he was one of the lucky ones. Students studying in the Eastern Bloc countries did much worse. Many of them are still in jail, or vanished. So you see, you shouldn't be too hard on Lolo, the cousin said. Such times are best forgotten.